This session was recorded at Journey Underground, a recovery ministry of Journey Christian Church in Fairbanks, Alaska.
All right. Welcome to the Underground, everybody. You guys are coming out tonight in the cold. I'm so glad you guys came out. I'd like to dedicate this particular session to those who are in recovery themselves and those who are interested in or are mentoring, helping, encouraging, sponsoring those who are in recovery. And I know that's a strong presence here, but it means a lot to me to speak directly to that whole group. Kind of our mission here, you know, I feel like kind of a sense of just, you know, closing a curtain around us, almost like a military feel, and to keep our focus and to make sure the focus is really, really narrow and straight. I just feel like it's important. It's easy to get distracted when we're trying to do this kind of stuff off to the left or to the right, and to make sure that we really keep our focus on what the main thing is of at least the Underground, what our mission is. And I want you to know what that is and to know what we're here about and what we're doing, and so that you can bring people and influence people to come and just know what people are going to get when they come here. Super, super important. Spend a whole lot of time in prayer and thinking about this. But anyway, what I'm really talking about is Christian identity, a person's identity. That's our call and that's our mission here. Really, really razor sharp focus, because the role of identity in a person's life is the single biggest factor in determining the rest of their lives, how they live their lives. It's that big. The impact of your identity, who you believe you are, it's just enormous. Your self-concept, how you see you, it's just enormous. Can't even say big enough words to describe the impact of how you see yourself, your view of you, how big it is. The moment you're born, you know, you're born. I was super cute when I was born. I don't know what it was like when you were born. But your little eyes opened and you began seeing light and hearing sounds, and your eyes seeing things, hearing things, began sending signals to your brain, and things began to form, and images being formed, and a self-concept being formed, a concept of you, a concept of someone else separate from you, a concept of we together, you know, others, that whole thing. You formed an identity. How you see yourself determines, for the most part, how you go around thinking. The thoughts that you think kind of fray off of how you believe about you, what you believe about you. And your thoughts determine, for the most part, your feelings. Thoughts and feelings, almost the same. You could almost say they're the same. Thoughts, feelings. You can bind them together. That's how close our thoughts are with how we walk around feeling. And our feelings, for the most part, determine the way we behave, our actions. And we all know that. I know we know that. It's important to know that. Thoughts, feelings, actions. The way we behave is really how the world then experiences you, how the world experiences you, how you come to the world, right? Your experience in life and others experiencing you in life. So how important is identity? It's absolutely enormous. So when we're working with people, when we're working with ourselves in recovery, we're really after a person's thinking, really after their thinking, and really after their self-concept. After that self-concept and after that thinking. Did you know the drug Valium was actually invented and developed for those struggling with alcohol? And when they would quit drinking, they were trying to go right to the feelings part, you know, skip the thinking and the belief systems about self and go right to making them feel better so they wouldn't drink, you know. And it just doesn't work when we try to skip that belief system and those thoughts. A thinking system has to be addressed. Super big deal. So we're really talking about the why a person says or does anything. The why a person's feeling a certain way or thinking a certain way more than what they're doing, right? One of the biggest things that's going to hinder a person's recovery, one of the first things that's going to stop my recovery in its tracks, is what we call religious thinking. Religion or religious thinking will stop my recovery right now. Over. And what I mean by religious thinking is, like, there's a big difference between being spiritual than being religious. Okay? Huge difference. Being religious, like, religion means what I have to do, what I have to say, the rules, the regulations, the rituals I have to do to appease the gods, right? So the gods won't be angry at me. So maybe they'll even bless me if I do it enough, right? But at least they won't squash me or curse me, right? So it's really about what I do to appease God, right? Now, Christianity is the flip side opposite. Christianity is a gift. And this is like Merry Christmas, a gift. And like my wife was talking about last week, the wonderful thing about a gift is it's something I don't have to produce. It's not something I have to generate. God gives me a gift. He gives me a brand new identity. He gives it to me, provides it for me, and out of that gift, I get to open that gift up and begin to operate. That gift comes with a lot of things, powerful things, like very special things. So we're really after that true spiritual living, and it's real, real tricky because religious thinking comes to me real quick. It happens really fast. It's natural. And what I mean by that is it can sound good. Like, if I could train up my children in the way they should go, then I know that God will be pleased. Like, if I could do that, right? If I could just win souls for Jesus, then God will rain down his smile upon me, right? If I could love my wife like Christ, then God will be pleased. Then I'll have worth, right? And so if you play it out, what a person is really saying in that thinking is, right now, as I am, I'm worthless. I'm not okay. He's not smiling down on me right now, but I will have worth. He will be if, you know, and the chase is on. And so it's really, really tricky. We fall into that. So on a scale of 1 to 10, and this is stuff we use in our recovery when we do recovery counseling, we do stuff. So I'm kind of sharing some of these things tonight with us. Is on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being absolute perfection. You know, I am shiny, righteous, perfect, holy, no blame. I'm blameless. On a scale of 1 to 10, how do you rate you on that scale? 1 being worthless, right? And for the most part, I get people say things like, maybe a 3 on a good day, maybe a 4, right? That's about where they are on the scale. Okay, then you ask, how does God rate you on that scale? How does God see you, right? 10 being righteous, perfect, holy, right? 1 being worthless. How does God see you on that scale? Anybody got an answer for that, maybe? Anybody dare speak? 10. Okay, 10. Okay, so let me get this straight. God sees me as a 10. He sees me as righteous, right? That's a big deal. Now remember, he's given me as a gift righteousness. That's a fact. He's given me righteousness, not just any righteousness, not my righteousness, his. What is the righteousness of Christ, really? The righteousness of Christ, it's his righteousness, which means he never sinned. He's not sinning right now. He never will sin. Like, he's given me his righteousness as a gift. That's saying a whole lot there. Whether you go with that or not, I can show you he's given me his righteousness. God sees me as a 10. But if I'm seeing myself as a 4, you see, there's going to be a problem. Like, that's what we're after with people. That's what we're after. We're after that 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 in the self-concept, my view, how and why I'm operating. We're really after that difference there, that discrepancy that's in their little scoring. Now, how do I get that self-concept? Where do I get it from, right? I could probably go over to Dwight and Patty's house, knock on their door and say, hey, how do you guys view me? Do you guys view me as a 10 or maybe a 3? Where am I at on the scale? They might be really nice. They might be really happy that day and give me maybe an 8, maybe a 9. I don't know. Maybe they'll give me a 10. But I go to the next door and knock, and they might say, right now you're a 2, right? Who knows what I'm going to get? So I can't go with other people. I can't get it from me. I've tried doing that my whole life, and it doesn't really work, right? And so Paul actually addresses this. I'll give you this one verse. In fact, I'll give you 2 verses where they're actually picking on Paul. Other people are picking on Paul about his ministry, the size of his ministry, the effectiveness of his ministry. And he's kind of addressing this whole thing about how we see others, how we judge others. And he's saying this here. He's saying, so we have stopped evaluating others from a human point of view, right? At one time, we thought of Christ merely from a human point of view. How differently we know him now, right? Like we see him walking on this earth, how they saw him, right? His birth, his wealth, his lack of all those things. Human point of view got it completely wrong, right? How differently we see him now. Now we get who he really is, right? It says, this means that anyone who belongs to Christ has become a new creation. The old life is gone. A new life has begun. He's made us brand new creations. And he's talking about we can't get it from other people. Okay, so I need 100% truth if I'm going to make a call on who I am, on my identity, on my standing in this life. I don't need 80%. I need 100%, right? I need to know. And as far as I know, this is the Bible is the only place I'm going to find 100% truth. It's the only place. And if someone isn't going to believe what this says, I really don't have a lot personally for someone in recovery. I mean, we can come up with some self-help things, disciplines, put up some barriers. We could do some things. But I really don't have a real deep answer for someone that isn't going to go by God's word. And so this is kind of where we're coming from. I'm addressing this. This is where we're coming from. I need the truth. And so a healthy identity, our identity, how you see you, a true identity that's healthy can only come from the one who made me, can only come from my creator. A real identity that's going to stand the test can only come from God, can only come from your creator. That's the only place that I'm going to discover an answer to who am I, right? Now, that's my big goal with people. That's my number one goal. Ultimately, our goal with people in recovery is for them to see themselves through God's eyes. That's our ultimate goal. So, like mentoring people, counseling people, influencing people, encouraging people, our ultimate goal. My ultimate goal isn't even to get them to obey God or to do all these things or to behave a certain way. My ultimate goal is for them to see themselves through God's eyes and their situation and their standing and their life, and the rest will come. I'm going after something much deeper than just behaviors. Now, do we have to deal with wounds, traumas, all these things? Of course, have to, right? But how those wounds have affected how they see themselves, how those wounds and traumas have affected their view of God and themselves. This is really what we're after. I remember a time, I've told this before, I think I've told all my stories before, so I'm going to have to change them around a little bit. But I remember I worked at Fred Meyer, right? And I was a night manager there. I would close the store down, and God taught me a lot about people and dealing with the public. I really needed it. But I worked for them for years, and I got a transfer to the West store. And I remember getting transferred over there, and the guy there that was in charge worked really hard to get me over there, and I was feeling pretty good about it. You know, the guy in charge pulled the strings, got me over there, you know, and I showed up on the scene. I remember my first day at work, put on my vest. I'm going to come out and run my first shift, you know, seeing those double doors. Here I come. The new manager, and I went out to run my shift. And right when I stepped out, my buddy that worked there pulled me aside and said, dude, the boss up there is having a meeting. And he goes, did you know that up there in the manager's meeting, like, did you know he's up there making terrible fun of you? Did you know he's up there really laughing at you? He said the only reason he brought you to the store is they were about to fire you where you were, and he said, no, I want Stan to come work here for entertainment value. Like, the guy's an idiot. Like, he doesn't know what he's doing. He thinks he does. Did you know Stan's kind of a moron? We're all going to have a great time watching Stan run his shift. And did you know that's what he's up there saying right now? My buddy was telling me this. Now, I want you guys to know something. I stepped back. I went back into the back room, and I sat down, and I was crushed. I mean, guys, I'm just telling you, this really happened. I was crushed. I sat down. I was like, you know, and I had just been walking this identity stuff out, really coming free, had been clean for quite some time, been learning to apply identity, and I just sat down. I was crushed. I'm like, I'm going to take this off. I'm going to quit. I can't. How can I even go on, right? Now, part of me wants to tell you what ended up happening when I ran upstairs to talk to him and confront him. Part of me really wants to tell you part of it. But do you know what? Why? Like, why? What? I think my motivation for telling you would be wrong, because it really doesn't matter. Like, when I sat down, I went before God, honestly, what it comes down to is, what does God think? What does he think? He closed the doors. He opened the doors. He moved me. He brought me. He was leading me. I was walking in faith in my identity, trusting him for my worth, learning how to do it. What in the world does it matter what all's going on up there? Like, it really doesn't matter. And I realize it doesn't matter. God, my Father, is leading my life and bringing me where he wants me. Who cares? Like, and it wasn't a who cares, it doesn't matter. It was, it doesn't matter, I can love people. Like, I can love people, right? Who are you when everything's been stripped away? Like, standing butt naked, humiliated, everything's been torn from you, you have nothing to lean on. Who are you right then? That's really what we're after. When we're training and we're doing this step in recovery, this is what this is about. This is what we've been about since we began. And this is the stuff that causes a crack pipe to fall from your hands, the needles to go to the dump, a person to stand up and free and walk in a different way. This is the power. This is the stuff. This is how God saves people. You have to start by being born again, born into a new family, into a new way of thinking, a new way of seeing, a new way of operating. So what we're talking about is really what it takes to satisfy your deepest, deepest need for love and respect. And I have that need, and you have that need. And did you know it's really, really hard to receive something God has for you, to receive that peace that passes all understanding, to receive that love and acceptance and sense of significance? It's really hard to receive it when you're absolutely focused on what you think you need to be okay, right? A dude that's so focused that other girl is going to meet his need, he's so focused on what she offers and how that's going to feel, he can't stop and get still and receive. You ever see a little kid in a shopping cart that's totally fine and wants something just out of reach? And it's just eyes bugging out, freaking out, screaming, is he okay? Like, the parents going, you're okay. Like, chill. You're not going to get that. And the kid's just completely believing with everything it is that what I need to be okay is right there, right? I'm going to get it right there. It's really hard to receive the peace of God. You've got to step back, right? And that was a really, really tough thing to begin to learn. Hebrews tells us that God spoke to us in many ways in the past, but he spoke to us clearly and finally through Jesus, as God was revealed through him. Who is God? How does he feel about you? How does he feel about our plight and our pain? You got to look to Jesus. So before I go to the board, I see some eyes like getting real sleepy. I don't want to be boring. Let's see. I got a couple of jokes here. Let's see. They're terrible jokes, though. They're not even funny, but let's just see. I was going to get a brain transplant, but I changed my mind. Aha! See? Okay. So I went to the airport And I dressed in my Batman suit, and I was really confused because I thought it said I had to go through costumes. Oh, that's really dumb. Okay. You know how they scan you and they do that whole thing and to see if you have any. And the guy that was scanning me, the thing was going off, right? And the guy had all these gold teeth. I'm like, dude, I think it's you. You know, I'm like, that's kind of for real. But anyway, the Batman suit was for real. My wife actually said she loves a man in uniform, but I'm not really sure because when I put on my ballet outfit, it just doesn't. All right. Maybe that's why we don't have real good jokes here at the Underground. Maybe we need to learn to appreciate the ones we have first, right? Okay. That was awesome. All right, trying to wake up. So God created us as a three-part being, body, soul, spirit, right? He formed man of the dust of the earth, giving him a body, breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, giving him a spirit, and then man became a living soul, right? Body, soul, spirit, right? So let me write this down here just really quick. I'm just going to write this one word to be lazy here. All right? I don't want to put anyone to sleep. The gospel can't be boring. That's like a sin, I think. Right? So he gave us a physical body, right? He gave Adam and Eve, he gave them physical bodies, right? I talk about this. Remember, this is us coaching and mentoring and encouraging people in recovery. He gave us a physical body, and that's a big deal. There's a whole biology behind that, right? This physical body runs on some stuff, right? Air, food, water, right? It runs on some things. If I don't give it what it needs, it's going to die, okay? Plain and simple, that's how it runs. But I'm more than a physical body, right? I'm also a person in here. Like some people call it a soul. Some people call it personality. I'm going to put person, right? So I have physical needs, personal needs, right? We were watching this show. How many of you guys watch that show Alone by the History Channel? Anybody see that? It's absolutely crazy. Crazy, right? They show up. The whole idea is like they stay out there as long as they can. Whoever stays the longest wins $500,000, right? So these survival experts pick their little 10 items they could take. They get dropped off Vancouver Island, right? Really cold, wet, horrible place. And they go out there and they go, I'm going to last longer than anybody else. I'm winning that money. And some of them are really, really good at survival. Like they build boats and all kind of crazy stuff with their hands out there, like with a little axe and stuff. It's amazing. And but the funny thing is as soon as they get their shelter, as soon as they find water, as soon as they have food, and they're sitting there under their shelter in the rain, right? It turns inward. Like the whole thing gets dark. Right? At first it was awesome. Like I can do this. I know how to hunt. I know how to build. I know how to provide. I can find water. It's all going good. But as soon as they get that need met, then things turn dark. Because now, like the guy was saying, man, every one of those guys just ended up bursting into tears. Like, my mom never loved me. Like, I mean, big old tough guys, like grabbing the sides of this bucket he had, and he's just wailing. Like, I had no idea this stuff was going to come out. Like, there was no button they could push, like, to get on a computer. There was no book they could read, movie they could watch, person they could run to, nothing. They just sat there with themselves, and it just started coming up. And every single one of those guys just burst, right? And it was so amazing. And the reason is, it's because there's a person in here and it has needs, right? It has a deep, deep need for worth, right? If I don't have air right now, I don't really care if I don't have water, right? I want to breathe. If I don't have water, I don't really care if I don't have food, right? But if I have air, food, and water, all of a sudden the focus changes and I become a person that needs love and significance. I need love and respect. Like, I need it, and it's a need. And so I breathe in love. I breathe out significance in my person, right? It's very different than physical. The person inside here breathes in love. I need it. I breathe out significance and importance. And it is breathing, right? And if I don't get air, food, and water, physically I die. We all know that. You know what that would look like. And if I die personally, if I don't get love, I'm scrambling. I'm drowning. I need love. I need significance. If I don't have it, I begin to die personally. And we actually know what that looks like, too. You know what it looks like? You know what personal death looks like, guys? It looks like mental disorders. It looks like madness. It looks like breaking down. It looks like divorce. It looks like can't keep a relationship. It looks like felonies. It looks like jail sentences. It looks like addiction and habits and an out-of-control life. It's as intense as my need for air and food. It's as intense. If I started choking you right now, you wouldn't really care about the consequences of your actions. And we see all across the town people that don't care about the consequences of their need as a person for love and acceptance. And I want you guys to know something. The first time I picked up a needle and I shot up, because it was what I was raised around, I'm just telling you, not trying to trigger anybody. The first time, my brain said, there it is. That's the love I need. Right? The first time I looked at pornography and saw her eyes looking at me, and she was looking at me like that, you know? And I've always wanted a woman to look at me like that, and here she was, and it was easy, and it was free, and there it was, safe, right? I'm just completely, unconditionally accepted by this person giving me all. It was something so powerful. I needed it, and there it was. There was my need. Like, it worked for me, so it's very, very intense, this need. So I don't care about the consequences. We see people doing insane things for their addiction. So I'm saying, when we work with people with addictions, when we're working with people in recovery, it always comes down to identity. It always comes down to self-concept, those needs for love and acceptance, forgiveness, that need for significance, a sense of adequacy, love and respect. It always comes down to those personal needs. That's what it's going to come down to every single time. And I never want to get off track of what we're called to do. I need food, air, water every day. Can't breathe enough right now to last me tomorrow, right? I could stand here and try, right? Wouldn't work out very well. I need it tomorrow. Same thing here. I need love tomorrow, just like I need it today. I need to know it today. Those guys out there on Vancouver Island, you should see the madness that goes on. It's always, you always hear it. You hear it. You hear it come out right out of their mouth. I need love. I don't care how bad to the bone they are, how sharp their axe is, what kind of track record they have of survival. They stand there under the shelter with the rain, and you see a little boy saying, I need love. And they just break down. And it's an awesome thing to see, right? It's an awesome thing to see our design come into play. Okay, so last thing we have here is spirit. And I won't go way into this, but the idea here is God also gave us a spirit. And these things here, my physical body, my soul, the person I am in here, is about getting what it needs, something it doesn't have, like getting something. But our spirit, in essence, by its design, is more about expression. So what I'm going to say is our spirit has a need, and that's a need to love. It's a need to love. And I could actually go as far to say as it has a need to love others like Christ. So did you know that every single one of these needs, every single one of these was designed to be met by God? Every one of them, and I hear stuff, but every one of them is designed to be met by God alone. Did you know that? Is that a tall order? I mean, is that huge? Like, my brain wants to do math to say it isn't so. Like, everything I do during a day and its connection to my personal worth, it's so huge. Like, my whole life has been nothing but a plan of how I'm going to make myself have love and acceptance and significance. My own plan of how I'm going to get it done. God's plan is very, very different, okay? You know, I don't believe, like, in reincarnation or that my dog was ever a person in a former life. But I'm telling you, the other day when he was sleeping, he looked just like he was trying to kickstart a motorcycle. It was amazing. It was amazing. That was dumb. I know that was dumb. How about this one? You think that was dumb? Someone asked me the other day, if you could drink a potion that would turn you into an awesome dog, would you do it? And you know, that question gave me pause. It gave me pause. All right. Could you imagine what it was like for Adam, created by God, to watch God, to live in a place, a home, built by God? Could you imagine what that was like as he placed him in the garden, a God-built home, God meeting his physical needs? Could you imagine what Adam must have felt like when he saw the nutrition that God provided for him as he met his physical needs? Like, that's mind-blowing that he did that. Could you imagine what it was like for Adam to not only have his physical needs met, but then to have God himself walk with him and talk with him in the cool of the day? Like, I love you, Adam. I love you. You're so important. Did you know how important you are, Adam? You're super important. I did all this for you. I did all this for you. Like, you're super important. Can you imagine what that must have felt like for Adam? And as a spirit being, for Adam, feeling the wind of the garden, the world, the earth, stand there and say, I'm a son of God. I'm a son of God. And then God created a tree and said, I don't want you to eat of this tree. I want you to obey me. And God giving him the ability to meet his need to love God by our obedience. And Jesus said, if you love me, you'll obey me. Meeting his need for love. To love God through obeying God. Like, what a powerful thing. And then God would create Eve, bring her along, and introduce him to a relationship. Now, my training and what I've understood is that God didn't bring, like, I know he said it's not good for man to be alone. And if we get that wrong, we can make it say something it's not saying, because Adam was fine. He was walking with the creator of the world. But remember, he was creating us in his image and in his likeness. And God is a community, Father, Son, Spirit. They're a community. They're a family. And so Adam could not represent God in his image by himself. He had to have a family. He had to have community to properly stand as the image of God, as Father, Mother, Son, children. That's the image of God. So I think that's really important to recognize that. So what we have is people come along and, you know, this guy comes along and he's wanting to date and marry this girl, right? She's stunning, right? Check her out, right? And so he's wanting her, she's wanting him, and we see this. And people, did you know that people don't really fall in love these days? They fall in leech, right, with each other. This is really what we see a ton of, right? You can tell how a marriage is doing by the Christmas cards, like the forced smile. The more and more the smile is forced, right, on the Christmas. So what it is we bring ourselves to this other person. And what we're really saying is not I love you, but I love the way you love me, right? If I bring these needs to my spouse, like I'm going to give you the golden opportunity I'm looking at my wife. I'm going to give you the golden opportunity to meet my needs. Lucky you. You know, have at it. Like, go ahead and begin, right? Like, that's how it is. And when you stop meeting my needs, you know, there's going to be a serious problem. Right? And we also have a thing where, you know, the spirit oneness. You know, when I focus on, I have a wonderful marriage, but I know what it's like to have a horrible one. And I know that when we focus on that spirit union, that spirit oneness, focusing on my need to love others, you know, we really function well. But bringing my need for unconditional love, my need for acceptance, and my need for significance, I bring that and lay that on her, right? And I try to play that out in a physical way, right? Okay, what we have is a relationship not like, we have a relationship like a tick and a dog. That's what we say, right? Do a tick and a dog have an intimate relationship? Like they have a real intimate relationship. They're deeply connected, right? Is it healthy? No. But what we see in this culture is two ticks and no dog, right? Two people desperately trying to get their needs met from one another, and it just can't work. And what we see is they come along and say, let's experience physical oneness first, you know, just to make sure it works, like that we're compatible, as if you can't figure the mechanics of that out. It's pretty simple, right? Like that seems to always work, right? But then it's just a race with time before these factors begin to come out. And it can't work, right? And how important is it? The only reason that we have worked out the way we have is when we step back and I take my time with God and I let him meet my need for worth. I talked it like great assignment. Here, go talk to God and here's a pad and paper. Go ask him to tell you who you are. Ask him to tell you how he feels about you. Spend that time with him. Super, super important to bring that wholeness together, right? I love this passage. It says, see how very much our Father loves you. See how very much the Father loves Don. He calls him his child, right? And that's what you are, right? That's what you are. But the people who belong to this world don't recognize you're God's child. Because they don't know him. They're not intimate with him, right? Knowing I'm a child of God is the first step. I can't tell you guys, you know, I can't say it enough. I only have a couple more points here. But I can't say it enough that when I sat out there, and I told you guys last week a little bit about shooting up and doing drugs and losing everything, getting a job, getting a place, getting a girlfriend. My addictions come out, it all come crashing down, back to jail, lose everything again, pack my bags, over and over and over and over, build my life to a certain point, physically build a little shelter, get a job, get some food, and then this stuff, you know, bring it down every time. Here I am, a middle-aged guy in Alaska, and there I am again. I've got a wife, and here we are trying to build a life. And I got needles hidden in the house. I got pills going. I've got stuff happening. And I know what's coming. I know what's coming next. Here it comes. I'm going to do it again. And I remember getting the identity material about identity in Christ. And I began looking at this. And it was so anointed by God at the time for me. I began looking at this stuff. And I remember coming in the house, talking to my wife, saying this. Like, if what this guy's telling me is true. And I know it is. I'm looking at it. Like, I'm looking at it. I remember looking at my wife and said, I'm a son of God. Like, I'm really a son of God. I'm really, truly a son of God. And I remember how deeply that touched me. And the light bulb came on. And I realized who I was. And I felt for the first time in my life that brand new person inside me. I felt that person stand up. I felt him stand up in me. And I realized he has met my need. He knows the depths of identity and how it changes us and moves us. And that's why he goes right from this very point here. The first thing he does, he says, I want you to be born into my family. I want to make you a royal son, a daughter. And it comes out from here. We begin living our life this direction. From the inside out. So, we don't really have rites of passage in this country very much, especially as Christians. I wish we did. But I have some things planned for the summer. I've been talking to Dave about it a lot, about spending more time alone with the gospel. Like, just me, no computer, no phone, no distractions, me and the gospel. Am I or am I not going to believe what it says, that I'm his? Because if what it says is true, then I have the ability to love. I have the ability to love others. And that's my heart motivation. So our mission is, as Jesus said, go into all the world, right? Make disciples. And then what does it say? Anybody know? Baptizing them what? Okay. Baptizing them in the name of the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit. And that's our mission. And baptizing them doesn't mean we go around dunking people in water. It doesn't. Getting them to say something. Repeat after me this little prayer. Dunk in water. There, I did it. No. Baptizing means, it's a dyer's term. It's a term used for dyeing cloth. And it's about what it's being joined to when it goes under. And when it comes out, it's radically different. Right? So we're baptizing people. We're immersing them. And anywhere in the scriptures it says name, it means identity. So we are immersing people, joining people to their true identity. Joining people and immersing people in their identity as a son or daughter of God. That's our mission. That's our call. That's what we're going to be doing. And so as we teach through this year, this 2017, we're going to really begin taking our lives back in many, many ways and addressing things from the standpoint of the good news of what God has done for us. We couldn't do for ourselves out of the gift of God of identity. And that's going to give us the power we need and the stance we need to face our issues, to face our pain. So that's kind of where we're coming from. That was my last little deal here at J.P. Jones. I want to thank my wife for being here. I couldn't imagine any other person that I would want to do ministry with in my entire life than my wife. And you could say to yourself, Stan, you just got a lot of points by saying that. And I would tell you, I need those points. I really need them. And I want to thank Mark, too, for his work on the sound. He's just incredible what he's done. Thank you, guys. It's been awesome.
Thank you for being here tonight. We'll see y'all next week.